All right. From Austin, Texas, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. You got Vinny's Texas correspondent right here, Anthropos, reporting live from Austin, Texas. And we're going to find out about that scumbaggery that's going on, and we're going to hear from the main man, Vinny Eastwood. Vinny, are you with me?
Yeah, bro, I'm right here.
All right, man. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I already recorded a show about New Zealand Freemasons today that one of my donors sent me, and it was cool. You know, it was like the first time I've ever actually taken a link from a donor and then just made a video and then thanked them for it, you know, that kind of thing. It made me feel good.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did they know what you were going to do with the video?
Well, I'm Vinny Eastwood, so nobody knows what I'm going to do.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But they definitely know who you are, so they knew. They're probably trying to show themselves in a good light as possible, I would imagine.
Oh yeah. I mean, the New Zealand Freemasons have been trying some kind of new recruitment tool, essentially, like that, trying to be a little bit more public. They're showing the public into one of their Masonic lodges that was newly built after the Christchurch earthquake and that kind of thing. And aren't we nice? Aren't we good giving $10 million to specific kids to get them scholarships to send them overseas for internationalist training to bring them back to be the heads of our major corporations and our country and that kind of thing. Aren't we so good? There's totally nothing bad going on here. Oh, look at this symbol on me. Oh, it's just the Grand Master symbol. What does it mean? Cut to the next topic, you know?
Exactly. Oh, man. Oh, you got a tiger by the tail on that one.
Yeah. Well, it's just kind of like I've interviewed a lot of people who've been stalked by the Masons, and it actually... Coincidentally enough, I'm a big Warhammer 40K fan. I don't know if you even know what that is, but it's a very, very nerdy thing to be into, right? And within the gameplay and all of that kind of thing, it's got all this Masonic symbolism, these black and white checkers, these all-seeing eye Illuminati pyramids on certain races, and this ideology, this overall ideology, and of course, a lot of the lore of how a future gets set up and stuff like that. Within the you know, nerdy kind of realms and what have you, you can see, or at least I can see, and I might be the only one, that there's not only Masonic symbolism within this kind of entertainment sphere called 40K, Warhammer 40,000, but there's also a lot of power within that therein. For instance, it only just occurred to me the other day, this influence, to actually go searching for it, and so I started looking up for Freemason Warhammer 40,000. Nothing. So I was like, that's interesting. Surely somebody else would have noticed the symbolism and would have done something about it or whatever. And so sure enough, a couple of different searches afterwards, I find the one and only article I could find anywhere that even mentioned it. And all it did was just mention it. And this was what was very interesting. Directly after him saying that, I had to scroll down the page for several minutes because the comment section of the page was filled with copy-paste, "We are Freemason Illuminati," so on and so forth, "Come and join our brotherhood," etc., etc. Like all this really freaky stalker-type stuff, hundreds and hundreds of these pasted comments, all from different Reddit accounts and things like that. And I was like, whoa, that's really scary, because I'd seen that before on one of my archives that I only just freshly freaking re-released, an interview with an English accountant, Gordon Bowden, and he figured out that Freemasons are creating a whole bunch of fake companies worldwide, stealing people's seed capital, and all of these fake companies and all of the scheming and everything is being run out of local Masonic lodges in whichever country those fake gas, oil, mining companies, etc., tend to be operating in. Now, underneath in the comment section of that was almost a word-for-word perfect copy of the exact same stalker comments I saw on that Warhammer 40,000 just even questioning about Freemasonry, that kind of thing. So it then reminded me of my friend James Wright, 32nd degree Freemason, tried to get out of the Scottish Rite in Texas. That didn't work out too well. His phone was ringing off the hook. Whenever he'd hang up the phone, it would ring again. Whenever he'd hang up the phone, it would ring again. Constant. Really, really scary shit. people following him all the way around. That's the power these people have. Now, within this news piece that I was just analysing, they admit that they got 6,000 New Zealand men in their employ, all right, that are members of this club. And they admit that there are 5 million men worldwide that are a part of this club, all right? And they admit that they give $10 million a year just in New Zealand, you know, to vague things. You know, they don't elucidate on what these things they are that are actually doing it. But again, this is a frightening thing that a lot of people aren't up with the play with. And simply watching a news item that would take 2 minutes and 30 seconds tops for the average person to read through takes me approximately 45 minutes to get through, because I have to stop, I have to explain, I have to show, I have to point out, you know, this kind of thing, because the job of a journalist is to put things in context. You can't just say the Masons running everything. You can't just say it's the Jews, it's the Jews, it's the Jews. You've got to put things in context. You've got to explain. You've got to have reasons. You've got to actually elucidate the fact that you understand what the it is you're talking about. And a lot of people simply don't know what they're talking about. It's kind of like GMO food. Do you know why GMO food causes tumors in rats and stuff like that? And the specific scientific language of how it works and that kind of thing? Of course you don't. But all you need to know is GMO food, tumors on rats, not good to eat. That's all most people need. They just need the simple understanding. Oh, what's the problem? Oh, okay, what's the solution? Don't do that. Oh, okay. You know, very, very simple. That's about the depth of detail that people want to go into. But unfortunately, this is allowing people to coast by on a cell phone Wikipedia dependent existence, which means that there is an arbiter of truth and there is an arbiter of information, and it's in your hand following you around all the freaking time. And if you lose your cell phone, you know, you've lost your connection to the world, you got nothing, you know, that kind of thing. You don't possess any knowledge. And what I've been trying to do sort of thing is, when you look at something, it can't just be, okay, well, bad. Again, let's have a look at the details. Let's have a look at the context. Let's explain this kind of thing so that you have a thorough understanding of it. Now, the reason for this isn't just to pontificate and get, oh, aren't I smart? How much I know? Oh, I'm just so bright. I know all of this useless information that I never apply. No. What you actually got to do is be able to understand things and be able to make up your own mind, specifically because of pattern recognition. Human beings can recognize patterns. Okay, now what the Illuminati does is they change the names of things. As soon as something gets exposed, they just change its name. And if it gets really badly exposed, they go underground. And then they change its name. And then they just continue scamming people, essentially, like that. Doesn't matter whether it's Rosicrucian or Vril Society or Freemasonry or the Shriners or any of this other kind of stuff. Or the Seventh-day Adventists or the Jehovah's Witnesses or anything like that. It's just all different forms of scam that have just come up because the original scam got exposed for the scam that it was. Now, regardless of how people believe about that and all their own religious beliefs and things like that, one of the points that I made in this video is that unless you're reading your Bible yourself and discerning what it actually means, and unless you've actually learned the process of how to define truth from fiction, which is not taught anymore, then your religion that you belong to is potentially toxic, and that you are mentally a slave to that religion, and they have hijacked your spirit. Okay, they have pulled you out and they've stuffed something else back in. They've turned you into a vessel for what they want you to be, which is more or less a battery to power their machines, more or less. Their machines of child kidnapping and pedophilia, and their machines of vaccine programs and things like that, which the Freemasons are all too happy. You know, there was a big Boston thing saying, okay, free vaccines, you know, from the Freemasons, you know, there's totally nothing bad going on here. You know, it's just crazy. And there's so much information on it that you could just keep talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. But the point is to actually take action. And sometimes if you know enough, the obligation is therefore upon you to explain that information to other people so that they know and they can pass that information on. And Mark Passio was talking today about or a video I was watching of Mark Passio today, he talked about what a sorcerer is, you know? Like, they try to put all these fictional characters into these magical boxes and things like that with all that magical thinking. And what happens is people don't realize that there are actual... there's real things that are implied by fantasy. All right, so if you talk about a sorcerer, the first thing that comes to your mind is the fantasy sorcerer. So he's got spells, he's Gandalf, he's freaking Yoda, or whatever the hell. They've got these magical powers and all this knowledge. All right, now, in reality, what a sorcerer is somebody who has so much knowledge, more knowledge than anybody else, that instead of sharing that knowledge and sharing that power that the knowledge gains them with other people, they occult it, they keep it secret, they hide it within their little covens and things of that nature, so that when they go out into the world, they have a power differential. And then you would kind of be forgiven for thinking, man, that's magic. Right? How did they accomplish it? I don't understand how that works. Therefore, it's magic, and it's a good idea to promote magical thinking because it stops people from critical thinking.
You bet. And the one
Hold on,
difference
man,
being,
I can't quite hear you there.
Okay, can you hear me now?
It seems to be Check. Coming through. It's might be something on my end. Just give
Check.
Me a second to twiddle it around.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. It's good. Go ahead, man.
Can you hear me now?
Whoa, no, you're, talk again?
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
That's very strange. So, the thing's picking you up, it can hear you, but I can only hear like a muffle sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, now it's fine.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, go ahead.
All right, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, and you're absolutely right about these sorcerers. And with the one, main difference between in the movies and in real life, you know, in the movies they can send their thunderbolt or whatever it is and just kill you on the spot. And in reality, it takes a few weeks or a month or a year or something like that. The magic acts a lot slower. But another thing I wanted to mention is that these sorcerers, you know, they have this all of this knowledge, but they are working in concert. You know, they are to some degree working with one another. But even if they're not, even if they're the sorcerer that's off in the tower working his magic alone, they are still working in concert with non-human intelligences.
Yeah.
You know, of one form or another.
Yeah, and that brings me back to another thing. Back on the Warhammer 40,000 thing, in this universe, there's this entity called Chaos. Now, essentially, there's the material universe, the material galaxy of our galaxy, and adjacent to it is what they call the Warp Galaxy. So, essentially, it's two planes of material reality existing side by side. Now, originally, when this human empire was set up, it specifically told people that such things in the immaterial universe, demons and so on and so forth, didn't exist. Now, the reason why the propagandists of this empire depicted in this fictional universe did so is because they understood quite clearly that if you give people who have slave jobs, short life expectancies, little chance for advancement, and very, very little prospects in life, and virtually no happiness to speak of, basically slaves, if you tell slaves that there is entities on the other side of the material universe that you can talk to, that you can pray to, that will reward you with gifts and powers and all the things that you could possibly dream of if you only made the right sacrifices, if you only performed the right rituals, if you only accumulated the enough knowledge to be able to access that other side. The reason why they don't tell people that is because they want to keep chaos at bay. They don't want people frickin' finding all these entities from the other side and bringing them forth willy-nilly, because it would just be impossible to control, all right? The whole concept of Freemasonry is order out of chaos, essentially. And what's interesting is that our society, indeed our movies and whatever, this order out of chaos line comes in quite often. Even in, what was it, Avengers Age of Ultron, Vision at the end, this, humans believe that order and chaos are somehow opposites, you know, that kind of thing. So it's all in front of us, and the difficulty that I have in dealing with it is that I sound like a crazy person when I talk about this kind of thing, right? Now, have I seen a demon or any entities or anything like that? But again, these are the fictional versions of them. What does a real demon look like? What does a real entity look like? What are these real creatures that the myths have made up and that kind of thing? For instance, I've made a script called A Werewolf, like the word aware and wolf, you know, just one word. And what the thing is, he turns him into a werewolf after getting exposed to these drugs from a from his psychiatrist and stuff like that. It's a pretty funny story. But he has this conversation with the psychiatrist around the midpoint of the film, and the psychiatrist tells him what a werewolf actually is. And it was based on these ancient French stories of these brutal murders. These brutal murders that happened in these quiet little villages and things like that. And people were very superstitious at the time. And so they were prone to believe that these brutal, savage murders were committed by a beast, not a man. And then they found a man that looked kind of like a beast, and then they said, it must have been him, he must have switched forms or something like that. Now, that's the ancient story. Now, the allegory inherent within this is a modern tale of psychopathy. The psychopath comes in human form. Once he has your trust, his form, his expression in this material universe will change, and he will do things so horrific and brutal to you that you would think they were an animal. A shape shifter, ladies and gentlemen. That's what these stories are actually about. They're psychological stories that were passed through ignorant peoples to make them think that these creatures had some kind of mystical power so that it would promote a fear of them. Now, to promote fear of a psychopath, I think is a wise idea. If you are not afraid of psychopaths, you are either clinically fucking insane or just a complete idiot. You don't know what you're dealing with. You ever been stalked by a psychopath? I have. Are you afraid of them? Yeah. All right. I'm just glad that they're not stalking me right this second, because that means I've got some kind of semblance of peace and prosperity in my life simply by their absence. And that's how you fight a psychopath, ladies and gentlemen. You have to invite them in to get affected by them. That old vampire trick, right? If you keep them the fuck out of your life, they can't affect you. They can't suck your lifeblood. They can't turn into monsters and then devour you and things like that. That's what these old allegories were trying to tell us. And we've shaped them into myths and legends, and now we've got whole huge sections of society devoting themselves to witchcraft and cults and blood drinking in Hollywood and all of this other kind of stuff. They're trying to manifest a mythical reality into our material universe. Okay? Sound familiar? That's what's happening here. They're trying to become real life demons. And this is what my friend James Wright from the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry told me, is that the 33 degrees of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, each and every one of you, each and every one of them takes a level of you away. All right, so let's say you're a spiritual entity, and that spiritual entity is very locked in. Okay, it's safe in your shell, the ghost in the shell. So, but with initiation, you can break off one bar and another and another and another and another and another and another and another, and another, and all of a sudden, all your spiritual protections or your guards are down. That's when they can corrupt your soul and stuff a demonic entity in. This is what he's telling me. He says that the whole point of Freemasonry, the Scottish Rite thing, is to see who they can ripen up for real-world demon possession. Now, How do ancient cults indoctrinate people with drugs, right? So in order to promote demon possession, this might come as a shock to people, they would give the initiates spirits. Okay, you ever drank spirits, vodka, and all of this kind of stuff? That's why it's called spirits. It's meant to weaken your spiritual defenses and to allow other entities in. So you'll notice that some people who do have a problem with their drinking, that after a certain point, once their defenses are down and what have you, this whole other entity comes out and they're not them anymore, you know? It's like, well, who is this person? It's because they're possessed by the spirits.
Absolutely. Absolutely, they are. And, you know, what you're talking about, Bears, is the exact same thing as soul cracking, which they have in the upper, quote unquote, OT levels of Scientology. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there. And so these, and it, as you know, Vinny, as you don't know, I've actually taken a hiatus from a secret society that I'm a member of, and I have not been to the lodge in almost 2 years now. And I'm not going to badmouth these people or anything like this, but many of the reasons that I haven't been back is for these very reasons that you and I are discussing. And the reasons why I have not gone very high up in the initiation is out of fear that my defenses will be worn down, you know, and I just don't want to go there, you know. But we're finding out that these spook agencies and these alphabet agencies are
intertwined.
Ceremonial magic. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And they there's something in the Scientology, which is absolutely no joke.
Well, Scientology was started up by a Freemason as well, L. Ron Hubbard. The Mormons were started up by a Freemason, Seventh-day Adventists, as you know them, all of these other religions were fractured off and that kind of thing, because it wasn't the Masons that did all this, it was the Illuminati that did this to the Masons, and this is what Frederick's clued me into, or at least trying to clue us all into, is that there's actually a secret war going on inside Freemasonry. Dark occultist versus light occultist. Light occultist wants to share the knowledge, give the power to humanity. Dark occultist wants to hoard the knowledge, keep it for themselves, and destroy humanity, all right, essentially. And so the Illuminati figured out that, and back to the Warhammer 40,000 context, at the start of this human empire, maybe about the year 30,000 or something like that, they created all these big super soldier clerks and all these primarchs and things like that, and his son, the son of the emperor, the big badass emperor who had all this psychic power and all this amazing technological knowledge, who was telling everybody, no, it was a strictly secular society, there's no such thing as demons and chaos or anything like that. What his son did is he created a lodge system called the Mordeville, where he would take his warriors from his legion and they would have no rules of conduct within them apart from non-violence and stuff like that. So that meant that there was no rank. That meant that you could come in, even if you were a fresh recruit or a highly powerful commander, all were given permission to speak within the lodge, and all the meetings within this lodge were secret. Now, what happened is the emperor's son, through the formation of these lodges and things like that, began to be tainted with the touch of chaos from the other side. And he then began to infect all of these lodges and then started to permeate that lodge system into other legions of the galaxy. And what happened is it caused what was called the Horus Heresy. And it meant that all of these secret organizations who were tied to the military, who were tied to the highest levels of government and things like that, had secret meetings within lodges in order to concoct a conspiracy to overthrow the order of the entire galaxy and plunge it into chaos with the one phrase, "Let the galaxy burn." This is the darkness that we actually fight against in an allegorical form, more or less. Chaos from the other side and the people who serve its dark agenda on this side just want to see everything burn. It's a scary, really scary thought.
And it makes you wonder what reward can they be hoping for, or what are they getting out of it by, you know, destroying the entire system? And what I've learned, Vinny, is, and I learned this just recently reading a book based on the teachings of Rudolf Steiner, and who is a Christian mystic who died in around, I think, 1924. He was the enemy of the Nazis. And regardless of how your feelings are of Christianity, this man had a type of a spiritual...
Can I just define that for a second? If we're talking about real Christianity, they follow the anarchic teachings of Jesus Christ with the anointing oil of cannabis that cures diseases and stuff like that, all for it. If you're talking about co-opted pedophile Christianity, not for that. All right, so that's just the two different branches of it.
Definitely. And I don't, as far as I know, Rudolf Steiner was just an immaculate person who never, you know, had the best interest of humanity at heart. And he did a lot of revealing about these secret societies and these Western Hermetic secret societies in specific. And what the game is, the end game is controlling. They, whether it's true or not, they feel like that they can control reincarnation. In other words, they'll somehow be able to control who they or what they reincarnate into. And believe it or not, this is one of the most fantastic things I've heard in all my years of studying these things. There is a slavery that is going on. And this is where the idea of materialism comes in. The idea that you're just a sack of animal meat and that nothing happens to you after you die. This idea of materialism, scientific materialism, is brought about as part of an agenda by people who absolutely do not believe that. They absolutely believe in the spirit world, but they're bringing about this idea of materiality because, as Rudolf Steiner says, in the modern day, in the age of evolutional conditions of consciousness of humanity, what you believe you are in life, you become in death. So almost like if you think you're going to heaven, you're going to go to heaven. If you think this, that. If you believe in materiality and there is no afterlife, your only point of reference will be the earth, and you will be chained to the earth. Your ghost cannot ascend and go to heaven or go wherever it you think that it's going to go. It's chained to the earth. And the ghost is wandering around the earth, and these secret societies herd up these ghosts. They round them up like cattle and use them in rituals. And that is literally what is going on. And that's why the obelisks in many of these ancient grave sites and these Civil War battlefields.
The channeling rods.
Yes. And they are using the power from these ghosts. And these ghosts are, believe it or not, what I'm led to understand, can even be sold in just like a modern day slave trade, except not with live people, with actual ghosts, and can be sold to interdimensional entities and stuff like that. As hard as it is to believe, that is apparently
in Warhammer 40,000. It says that the immaterial reality is known as the warp, and it says that souls are currency in the warp. Now the demons and the entities and things like that that live within the warp only exist and only survive because of the actions of beings within the material universe. Their beliefs.
Is that not what I just said?
Exactly, exactly. So what they, again, this goes back to that whole idea of allegory, is that they've, because I was just thinking about this, because when I was back into 40K when I was as a kid and stuff like that, I didn't get into the lore. Not until the last few years did I actually really get into the lore of this kind of thing and how vast it really is. And it's, because I've got so much of an understanding of Freemasonry and conspiracy and occult secrets and things like that, I'm able to see the truth of the allegory in this lore, right? Like, these guys are actually giving you the truth in the lore that I haven't even come to by interviewing high-level Freemasons and stuff like that themselves. I needed it to be fictionalized in order for me to understand and accept it. You know what I'm saying? And this is the frightening thing. What if we're living in such a fictionalized reality that we don't know the difference anymore, right? This philosopher was talking about this concept called the desert of the real, right? We're spending about, I don't know, almost all of our waking hours in front of some screen or another, whether it be our phone or TV or whatever. So this is our entertainment form, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to your new world order. You're watching your programming and enslavement even as we speak while you're watching this, folks. All right. Isn't that terrifying? Right. So I came to that realization and said to myself, okay, well, if I am going to be doing a whole bunch of screen time and stuff like that, like everybody else, what am I going to use that screen time for? Am I going to watch Mark Passio presentations about natural law and the sacred masculine and the sacred feminine and new age bullshit and all of this kind of stuff? Hell yes. Am I going to watch documentaries by Jason Burmis and James Corbett and all of these other great truther documentary filmmakers who've been in the game for more than a decade and haven't lied yet, right? This kind of thing. You can use that screen time to fill yourself up with real knowledge, but here's the kicker. You have to push back, okay? If this screen is pushing something at you, ladies and gentlemen, if it's pushing something at you, you need to be able to grab it and then hurl it back, okay? You have to be able to contribute. Now, maybe being in the comment section and things like that for some people is enough. For me, that's not enough, because I'm a narcissistic, attention-seeking New Zealander with, like, a very small audience. So I need more. And the whole concept of contribution, more or less, you put two heads together. You put three, four, five, six, you know, that kind of thing. I have been told a number of things after my shows by my listeners that I didn't know, and I have thanked each and every one of them. They made me look like an idiot, and they told me something that, you know, made me obviously look wrong, and I thanked them for it. Why? Because if you're wrong, the best you can hope for is to not continue to be wrong.
Exactly. And so you've defeated a big problem with humanity and just human nature, and that people are so, you know, wrapped up in the moment and so wrapped up into being right and knowing everything. And let me tell you, if you know everything, you cannot learn anything. Yeah. And, you know, so you need to be wrong, or you need to not know everything every once in a while. It's a very good point you're making there. And most people just are not able to do that.
Yeah.
And that's a sad testament right there.
Yeah. Well, in 1999, there was a couple of scientists, I forget their names, but they came up with this test, and it tested people on what they knew and what they thought they knew. And they found that the correlating things were completely askew. All right. So that means if you've done a hell of a lot of research on something, you don't have any idea how much you don't know about that thing. Like the more knowledge you accumulate about a particular subject, the less you actually think you don't know. And you don't know what you don't know. Somebody could come left field and just go, hey, here's this fact and here's that evidence, and it would throw 90% of your knowledge out the window. You know, it just becomes immediately useless. And out of people's natural psychological fear of being wrong, they cast out those things and they go, no, I'm not listening to that. No. That kind of thing, because it would cause you to make an adjustment. Now, that's what Mark Passio talked about, the definition of controversy. You know, everybody been saying, oh, he uses controversial language. He made a controversial statement. Oh, this controversial confrontation that's turned into a conflagration. You know, it's just all my time with the nobody knows what it means. You know what it means? It comes from the word confront. Okay? There you go. It's confronting you with something that makes you change. That's all that it is.
And if it makes you change your worldview, they would just rather have your head. They would just rather have your head than change their worldview. And that's why one of the big strengths of religion, I mean, why you just cannot really get anywhere with anybody who's just dogmatic in their fundamental beliefs, no matter what the religion is. And it's hard to learn how to tiptoe around that. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But you know, you cannot alienate yourself from everyone. You know, I'm living here in the United States. Most people are still Christian. I consider myself pro-Christian just because I want people to like me. I have friends. The best people I know are all Christians, you know, and they're good people. And what am I going to do? Become an Islamist? No, I'm not going to do that. Become a Satanist? Well, you know, some people might already call me that, and they would be wrong. It's a minefield. It really is.
Yeah, well, what's problematic is that the communists figured out in the early 1900s that the best way to control the resistance to your agenda is to lead it yourself. So they took over Satanism, and they took over Christianity, and they took over Islam, and they took over Buddhism, and they took over every single major religion and co-opted them to start teaching people bullshit. All right, so the founding of Christianity, I mean, back to the Warhammer 40,000 thing, this emperor of mankind, he always insisted throughout his tenure while he was alive that he was just a man. He was just a man. He was just a man. Now, despite that, he had all these great powers and things like that, and the psychic potential and la 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 la. So a whole bunch of people were thinking, no, he's not a man, he's not a man, he's a god, he's a god, he's a god. No, 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 just a man, just a man. Now, Julius Caesar himself reportedly was coming into Rome after conquering the last of the Goths. He secured the empire for Aeternum, and he was absolutely jubilant. But he had the presence of mind to ensure that one of his pages would always be constantly whispering in his ear as he marched through the entirety of the city with all the accolades and the streams and of celebration going around him. You are just a man. You are just a man. Now, what happened after the emperor was slain by his son Horus, whose symbol was an all-seeing eye on his belt, he was then put into this thing called the Golden Throne and became more like a lighthouse, essentially. Now, directly after that, he wasn't alive per se to be able to make his own decisions and refute things and what have you. And so a state religion began, and it was controlled not by the establishment, but by rebels to the establishment. And then the establishment came in and they realized that these rebels were actually pretty freaking hard to conquer because they had a big, big faith and all of this kind of thing. And when people are extraordinarily faithful in something and a blind belief, they make really good, dedicated soldiers who don't break, they don't run. Why do you think the Christian Crusades went on for so freaking long without people retreating and going home after the bloodshed and the horror that they saw? Because they knew, right? They knew. Because they were told to believe that this is what God's will was. Now, at the time, the empire was strictly secular, and they tried to conquer this little planet who'd started up this cult to worship the emperor. And they couldn't really do it. So they folded them into the existing chain of command, and they called them the Ecclesiarchy, and they became high lords. And this new religion became the official state religion. And what they found was, in the Immaterium, because people were worshipping the emperor, it gave him more power to protect them from the demons in the warp that were trying to break through. So the very thing that the emperor had told people that he was, just a man, the very thing that he told people not to do, to worship religions and things like that, was in fact the only thing that was keeping his empire alive and him alive after he died. A comic tragedy, essentially. Living in constant contradiction with your beliefs simply because the universe will collapse if you don't. Right? Isn't that
That's
interesting?
Fascinating. Yeah, and it gets into the concept of the noosphere. And I don't know if you've been following Tim Riefat, but he's one of the most enigmatic people. I don't know really what to make of him. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I'm not timid about Reefer, but I've not heard of Tim Riefat, so go ahead.
Tim Riefat, he's, let me tell you, this whole idea of psychic warfare, there's something to it, and there's a noosphere and the, you know, and the astral and everything like this, and these people have been trying to corner this thing for the longest time, and this is what the degraded, you know, cults that have come down are what we have as today's modern secret societies. But there was a pharaonic science back in the day, ancient days of Egypt, and the people would worship the pharaoh, and these obelisks, which were put upon ley lines, and the people's worship would actually go to the pharaohs. To the point where it would even the people who made the statues of the pharaohs made them even more fair than the pharaohs actually were. But the people's belief in these fair statues actually physically transmuted the appearance of these pharaohs. And this is from what I can tell, it's absolutely real. And what the modern day version we have of this is these pop stars, with especially these pop princesses, these women that are, we think in Illuminati terms, that they're used, that they have handlers and all this stuff, and they're MK Ultra monarchs, presidential models, and maybe all that's true. But according to Tim Riefat, they are some of the most powerful witches on the planet at this time. I mean, when you talk about Katy Perry having billions of followers, you know, and just that many people hinging on your every word, that energetic exchange is real. And there are
there's actually studies that prove this. I'm not sure if you've ever had any hard drugs, bro, but I've done the ecstasy, the mescal, the acid, and all of that kind of stuff. And then I saw these studies showing that, and then I've talked to people who do meditation, right? This one guy, I go, "What do you do, man? Weed, ciggies, a beer?" And he's like, "No, you'll never guess." And I go, "Meditation?" He goes, "Yeah, okay, I guessed it in one, you know." and it found out later on that the part of the brain that activates when you're having a ciggy, or when you're drinking a beer, when you're smoking a joint, or having some acid, or anything, or having a religious experience, is the exact same part of the fucking brain, bro. So, like, you can get people to feel literally high, trip balls, because you are who you are, because they believe you're something that you're not. Right? Listen, it's a god, it's a star. Oh my god, they just touched me. You know, it's just like, dude, have you just had some E or something? No, Katy Perry just touched my nipple. It's like, bro, you're putty in the hands, man. These people are capable of doing psychologically what can't be done to you chemically. And that's a powerful frickin' weapon.
Yes, and so they have this psychological power, okay? They have this monetary power. All of these things, we know that these things exist. The question is there real power in addition to that? Some sublime psychic power that they are gathering up, whether they pass it on to some entity or keep a residual of it or something like this. Is the power real, or is it all some psychological stuff?
Can you manifest a mansion for yourself? No, then I think the power's pretty real, bro. You know, these people basically, they sell their souls and they do the bidding of the New World Order, and they distract people, and then they get rewarded with power. And back to the 40K thing, the thing that was in Horus's mind, and all these primarchs and everything like that who rebelled against the secular rule of the emperor, is that they were promised by the chaos gods gifts of the chaos gods. They would be granted extra size, extra strength, extra regeneration, extra intelligence, extra psychic power, or something of that nature. And then that's the allegory, but you take it back into the material universe, the agents of chaos are going after these ordinary people, and they're trying to corrupt them with advances. Oh, we'll make you look really nice with our digital touch-up technology. We'll make you sound so much better than you actually can frickin' sing. We'll make you look so good with all your new things and all the cars that you can drive around and everything like that. Power from the material universe. Okay, and essentially that's what these people believe. They think they're tied to the material universe, and that's what they want. That's why they are so extravagant within the material universe, because they've got a psychological problem within their mind that they didn't get loved enough as children. Essentially, so what that does is, unless your mummy and daddy love you and never betray you, you may have a differential to one degree or another that's different from ordinary people. It becomes very difficult to love yourself adequately, because you will have a difficulty balancing how much love you give yourself. Do you give yourself too much? Are you overindulgent? Are you do you get overly passionate and maybe even aggressive at certain things out of nowhere and stuff like that? That's the basically the hallmarks of the condition that I'm talking about, a condition which I suffer from called frickin' narcissism and complex post-traumatic stress disorder, and so many people of us got it, and so many of us don't know that we got it. And it was a big shock for me to find out, oh my god, I'm a narcissist and I've got complex post-traumatic stress disorder. What a bummer. Is that why I can't work for people and have panic attacks? Yep. Is that why every time I get arrested by cops I have panic attacks? Yep. You mean my conscience and my physical form became one? Which means that if I'm doing something that compromises my conscience or my mental stability, my body immediately reacts to it. Okay, so I can't differentiate fight or flight response. It's all the same thing. So if somebody's attacking me verbally, my body reacts as though they're coming at me with a big stick and I've got to react to it, essentially. So imagine that, but instead of having self-control, instead of working on yourself, and instead of trying to do what's right, instead of what your instincts just tell you to react and do, imagine if you didn't do that. Imagine if, in fact, all of your little reactions and all of your little insecurities and things of that nature, you tried to cover up with pleasures of the flesh, material possessions, and things of that nature.
And then imagine...
You got rewarded so much for your avoidance of your own personal issues. You got rewarded so much for avoiding them that you become extraordinarily powerful and influential. Now, you'd begin to think, even then, that that person might be able to live with themselves. They'd love themselves enough. You've got all this stuff and everything like that. No. They're still empty. They still need more and more and more and more and more, and they need that constant attention. That's why too much is never enough.
That's right. And now, whether they've received these material rewards or not, or if they've calmed themselves and they're able to control themselves, imagine this. Imagine if they're 6'3" or 6'4" and they weigh over 200 pounds and they're a big, vibrant, good-looking, young, strapping young man named Vinny Eastwood in New Zealand, and all the fear that that might
engender.
Bring. Yeah, engender, exactly. So you probably inadvertently intimidated people before with your megaphone and, you know, being out in the crowds and stuff like this.
No, one can only hope.
Of course, yeah. Well, yeah. And these days, and people, I mean, I'll tell you what, unless you just act a certain way, you know, you're a threat to everyone. You know, you can say hello and be the nicest person, and you're all of a sudden Mr. Threat.
Well, that's what happens in a communist society. Premier Hu Jintao of China was noted by a couple of analysts as being a completely mediocre person. And they were perplexed by this. How does an incredibly mediocre person get to the top of a freaking giant country with a billion plus people in it? And you suddenly dawns on, oh my God, he's the only one who figured out what the game is. If you are exceptional, you are a threat. If you are original, you are a threat. But if you're exceptional and original and dangerous and scheming and you don't show it, then when you get to the top, baby, then when you get to the top, you've got everything.
You got to swallow a lot of pride along the way. You know, you got to swallow
and some other things as well.
Pride.
Depending on the kind of cult that you're in, you may have to swallow other things than pride. But, but you know,
with one end or the other.
Hey, it's a long way to the top.
Yeah, if you want to rock and roll, right? Yeah, that's what they say.
All right. Woo! Oh man. Okay, that's good. All right. So, Ian, thank you very much for inviting me on.
Yeah. Hey, man. I'm happy to be your correspondent here in Texas, letting you know what's going on here and keeping us abreast of the activities of all the despicable powers that be all over the world, the scumbaggery, so to speak.
Mm. Yeah, but it's she's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you can, please, if you do want to support the broadcast, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com via PayPal, Patreon, or KiwiBank. You can support my operation here, just bringing the truth that no other New Zealand media can really be bothered doing, more or less. And it doesn't matter whether or not you're from New Zealand as well. I've got so many international listeners and supporters, it's not funny, because I think the reason I actually started doing this per se is because I was listening to American talk radio show hosts talking about the New World Order and the scumbaggery and so on and so forth. And then I started going to New Zealand protests and listening to New Zealand activists speak about the scumbaggery and stuff like that, and they were almost word for word sometimes saying the exact same thing. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to my show, you may think I'm from New Zealand, even if I'm reading a news piece from New Zealand. It'll still be relevant to you. I was taught, or at least I was given this idea by Vapi Kupinga, who's the number one rated talk radio show host in New Zealand, and she had an urban Māori radio station, tiny little station and that kind of thing, at 9:30 at night on Thursdays, and she had better ratings than the big mainstream media, that kind of thing, on a little urban Māori network. Beautiful, wonderful lady. And she said, the way I did that is I took all of these international stories, all of these big issues with health and everything to do with the New World Order, and I related it to Māori. And I took that to mean, well, hold on a second. What if I take all of these things as well and relate it to Americans? You know? There's 400 million Americans. They've got the most guns, they have the most potential, and they're also the most under threat right now. If America falls, all falls, ladies and gentlemen. We're all in the sink or swim together, right? And that's the end of the bloody story, isn't it, bro? Because when it comes down to it, these entities that are infecting our world with their chaotic filth have no qualms about destroying the human race. They have no qualms about it. And so, thusly, we can't be apprehensive about doing what needs to be done in order to rid the human race from their tyranny.
That's right. And I want to mention to everyone, Vinny lives in New Zealand, but he'll take American dollars. And I want to encourage everyone to give to the show right now. That's $11 right there. Imagine if everyone just donated $11 right now, how much better this world would be. Vinny, thank you so much.
Thank you, bro. And by the way, if you email me, ladies and gentlemen, if you do want to send cash and get a birthday card or something like that, like an old granny used to, yeah, man, cash and a birthday card delivered to Vinny Eastwood. Those are so very well appreciated, because my wife, she never ever could make it till Christmas morning. She was always unwrapping her present secretly and stuff like that. So whenever we get a package delivered of any kind, ladies and gentlemen, you can be guaranteed I won't be the one opening them, because she just loves to unwrap things. But I will read your notes and everything like that, and I very much appreciate them. So, all right, friends, countrymen, Russians.
Yeah. Vinny, we thank you.
All right, thanks, bro. Catch you later, everybody.
All right, man. Bye, y'all.